This program was produced at and first aired on NPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, NPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. NPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out npr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Ivan Ellett,
Muriel Ellett,
and I'm Stuart Perks. Do you have fond memories of your compulsory military training?
Oh, I the part at Ohaaki, right, you know, did appreciate that. Certainly Hobson Ball was a bit of a trial, but, just because of the kind of, you know, I suppose being pretty raw and then not being used to having people sort of yelling at you. And marching around a bull ring all day and for hours on end, it seemed, and, and having to adapt to a different way of life, I suppose. But certainly Ohaaki was much more relaxed. We played quite a lot of badminton at Ohaaki.
Okay.
In our spare time.
Well, was that normal in New Zealand? Or?
Well, I think because it was there, it was inside.
And it was with all the hangars, you mean? They've got lots of...
No, it was actually in a hall of some kind that we played, and they did have hangars there, but it was in the hall, and quite a lot of our spare time was actually spent in playing badminton.
Well, what about the social side of... The training? Were you mixing with different sorts of people?
You met, well, you certainly were in your own group mainly. You didn't, possibly at meal times, you were in a big dining hall kind of thing with other people, but really you just stayed in your own groups, even there in the dining room.
And even in barracks and so on, it was the same?
Oh, in the barracks, we were just in a long open room. There was no privacy.
About how many in a room then?
Well, that's another point that I've been trying to bring back to mind.
Roughly, is it 6 or 20?
That's a good question. I would have thought, in my earlier times, I would have thought about 20. I'm hoping I'm not exaggerating, but all you had was a bed. I think we had a man robe and drawers, which were one kind of thing. And I think that was, and the space that you could stand on either side, that was basically it. There wasn't.
So each barrack room, there'd be a row of beds on each side, and then there'd be a showers and washrooms.
They were just general,
In the building or a
separate? I think they were off to the side, if I remember right. And that was true at Hobsonville as well. The same arrangement. You were in a long barrack. With a whole lot of other people.
So did you mix much with those outside your own cohort then?
Not a great deal. Hobsonville, really, we weren't there long enough, probably. I can remember going, we went into town on a Friday night from Hobsonville. We went in on the ferry. There was a ferry went from down on the inlet up to Riverhead. A ferry went across straight into the city, and we went in on that, and can remember going into Queen. That was the first time I heard a Wurlitzer organ. Now, one of the theatres in Auckland in the Queen Street had a Wurlitzer organ, and I'd always had, we went to, must have gone to the movies or something, and this organ came out of the floor, and somebody playing the organ. And
that was just between films, was it?
I think it was before the film, if I remember rightly. And might have been at half time in the... But I remember going to I can't remember what theatre it was now, it was a Civic. But anyway, there was a theatre, and whether it's still there, I'm not sure.
So you had a bit of time to get away. I recall in Britain there was something called the NAFI. Did you have something like that? That was the... sort of way, maybe meals, a social place for you on base?
No, I can't really remember anything like that from those times either. Can't remember.
No, pub on site?
Can't remember one.
No.
I think we were too young.
Yeah, well, if we started at about 14 and you go away on camp, and I do remember they had, we were allowed to go to the bar, but in a separate room, and they give us pint mugs with orange juice.
No, I think you see, we were all under 21, but we're in compulsory military training, but I can't even remember.
I was a 21 age. Drinking age
for a long time.
Yeah.
At that stage, it was 21.
Yeah.
Okay. So you just didn't. I guess people just didn't even think about.
Yeah.
I think there was a bit of possibly drinking off the side, but I remember the towards the end of our training. It must have been earlier than that because the flu thing came in. They evidently, some of them, that day I was on duty at medical centre, a medical thing, but some of them had stored grog under a culvert somewhere along the wing, and even the corporal was in on that, so.
Yeah.
And that was early in the morning, first thing in the morning, so shouldn't have talked about that.
I think there's a statute of limitations on that. So what about sort of social activities in the year? They just say you finish at 5 and you've nothing to do for the rest of the day?
Pretty well.
So
and that's when we played badminton.
Okay.
You sort of didn't become, at Ohaka, we really didn't become part of base life, you know, because of the length of time you were there. You just didn't seem to. Whether some of the others did, I don't know, but I don't think they did really. We just kind of, we lived from Monday, because every weekend we basically were allowed to go home.
Okay. Yeah.
We finished up on a Friday, and we were able to go home for the weekend.
If you were local, I suppose. But
yeah, if you were local, and I went home to Woodville one weekend, and Palmerston North another weekend, sort of thing. And I think most of the guys, you know, if they had vehicles and could get home, they just went home. For the weekend. And again, I think it had something to do with the fact that we were the last intake, and
so it was a bit more casual.
They weren't people were quite not quite sure what was going to happen in the future,
but it was all wearing uniforms right through.
Always wore uniform even when you came into town, you wore uniform until you got home. And
So was the military stuff that you have to keep it all properly pressed and your shoes properly clean?
Oh, yes, you had. Yeah. When we got it, when we got our clothes at Hobsonville, we went into a store and they fitted you out with what you needed, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you got your uniforms. They've obviously all been stored in bags or something like that, because they came out awfully creased and folded, you know.
Yeah.
And I, unfortunately, some photos were taken, and I've had photos, but I couldn't find. I've been looking for them, but I can't find them now. But here I am, and fully dressed in one of these wonderful uniforms with all creases and all that. Doesn't look great at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, you had to, we had to press them, and we had to shine the buttons and you use the Brasso or whatever it was and shine up the buttons.
And there'd be regular inspections of that?
Oh, there were inspections, they weren't. I can't remember them being that often, but I mean, we're inspections here, to make sure you were.
And then with the barracks, then, was it things like you had to have your bed made in a certain way and things folded in particular ways?
There was all that kind of thing. You certainly had to have your things done properly here.
It's interesting when I've heard various people who've actually been in combat situations, and they say all that sort of drill actually becomes very important, because if you're, you know, out in the field and you've got wet socks and things like that for days and everything, and the problems with that, so it's actually can actually be important to have that discipline.
I think good you know, it's the habits that they teach you do hold you in very good stead, and it's possibly one of the better points about things like compulsory military training is that fact that, you know, you got put into an order, or people realised that life could be lived according to an order.
Self-discipline
kind of thing, and whether that was a plus or not, I suppose people will debate forever.
Well, were the people who rebelled against that?
Nobody rebelled in those days.
They weren't there.
I think
as much from school would it be you have the discipline in school and they just accept
it. It's really just what life was about. I can't remember being that upset about it at all. You just presumed that was you know, you went into that at 18 years of age. I think you grew up a bit by going in for those weeks. And
did you find you were mixing with people from, you know, very different backgrounds?
Oh, yes. There were all sorts of people, really. You know, a lot of people possibly had only just started work, like I had. And so were pretty green as far as even the trades and things that they, all their jobs were concerned. But certainly you were mixed up with all sorts of people.
And that all worked fine. You just learned how to get on with each other.
Didn't seem to make any difference.
You could. I know in Britain, given all the different regional accents, that sometimes meant communication was difficult. But you wouldn't have had any.
No, problem. You didn't.
Were all your group North Islanders?
I would think they most probably were. And most probably reasonably local. I know there was somebody from Dannevirke, and there was somebody off a farm out Fielding Way sort of thing. And I don't know where they all came from.
You didn't know any of them before you?
No.
So how many are you? You've shown me a photograph. How many do you think were in your particular group for the medical?
Well, program? I'm trying to think. I've been trying to think how many came down from Hobsonville, and I haven't been able to really work that out. It seemed to me to be quite a few, but there was the group of us that came down to the medical area, but the photo only shows up to be about five or six of us from that.
And it's mixed, because you've got five guys at the back, and then you've got a man and a woman who were your instructors,
that's right.
And a couple of young women who were on the course as well.
Were on the course, but they were, I've got a feeling from this distance that they were actually coming into the Air Force on a full-time basis. And I certainly think that one of them came from a nursing background. Not quite sure.
Because they had no actual military service to do, so they were doing the courses.
They possibly had basic training.
Because they'd chosen to go into
Had chosen to go into the Air Force full time, and that's why they're in that photo.
Do you recall how you got on with each other then? Treat it as normal?
We did get on well. The group did get on well together. There was I can't remember anybody being out, you know, at loggerheads with anybody. We just got on with.
And having the, you were saying, sort of doing nursing training training towards nurses. You just accepted that as normal?
Just accepted that was part of what you had to do, you say.
Now, you mentioned you and Muriel have been discussing the issue, something that periodically comes up these days is issues of young people, and would something like military service or work in the community, would something like that be beneficial for them? Did you come up with something along those lines?
I don't think we came to any conclusion, but it was just sort of out of thinking about this. just with something, you wonder whether it would even fit in today's world. You know, I doubt politically it would be acceptable, possibly.
Yeah, whether different it would, values.
Yeah, it's interesting because Queen Elizabeth College, of course, they've got a military component there for the kids in the secondary department. And
when you say that, that some of them, part of their training is gearing them up if they wanted to go into the military. Is that what you mean?
If they wanted to go into the military, I would think it's a very good thing for them to do, most probably, because it would give them an indication of what they were in for. Yeah.
Oh, so what are they doing there? Is it military
It's a military. I see it. It's only because it comes up on stuff I've noticed that's kind of a military style.
Oh, so military academy component within the school.
An academy of some kind. Yeah, be interesting to know what effect that has as against the effect those not in the program.
Yeah, might be. Now I'm just thinking that the traditional military training was drill, being obedient, following orders, and now there's much more of a focus in military, as I understand it, of people being able to show initiative themselves and often using high-tech equipment. So maybe the change in military would be more suitable for young people who value rights and independence more, perhaps?
It would be. You can understand that it may probably give them experience in all sorts of things now, you know, in electronics and that kind of thing that must have come into warfare and radio and communication and all those areas.
Well, they go in for weeks of flying drones and
there must be a lot more interesting things that they are now doing. Whether, you know, how much that would work with compulsory, registration.
Yeah, I suppose it's the basic training where you've got to get them in order and working as a unit and being used to following orders, and then there's the initiative sort of thing later.
It's difficult. I mean, I don't know whether, when you try to discuss it and try to work it out, I mean, you can see pros and you can see cons and... Yeah. And it did no harm that I can see. It might have harmed some people, but I can't imagine why. I was a pretty shy kind of person. I wasn't. Yeah. I'm certainly not an outgoing. Never been an outgoing person. But I. And so, if it was going to have detrimental effect, I guess it should have had it on me because I was so quite inward.
Well, I mean, if they want people to sort of keep their heads down and jump and do things as required, it would probably fit in. It might be more the rebellious, independent person who finds it hard to toe the line.
It could be that about it. I think the other thing, it certainly made me more outgoing, most probably, than I would have been.
Build your confidence, possibly, meeting challenge. Mm. Was it, do you felt that it pushed your, what would you say, pushed your boundaries or, your challenge to?
Certainly it pushed those because, I mean, I'd been at school basically up until I went in there and then suddenly to be thrown into a world outside and been a fairly inward, well, not an inward looking, but, you'd had a fairly quiet sort of life, I suppose, up until that point. And not having to worry too much and then suddenly to be confronted with all these new experiences.
What about assault courses? Did you...
No, we didn't do any assault courses. No. Perhaps that's one of the great joys I missed out on. Not sure. No, we didn't do anything like that, actually. Okay. Again, I've got a feeling it's just the fact that we were it was only the military still went on for a little while after that, but it was I've got a feeling the Air Force was just cut. They stopped the Air Force and it was just the military, and then
military, you mean the Army.
And then I think they changed the rules, how they people, like, they went over, I think, onto a system where it depended on when your birthday was, and there were things like that.
So a ballot sort of structure.
It was a straight ballot. Yeah. And if your birthday came up, you weren't.
Yeah. Mm. And so, and in New Zealand, there would have been no options such as, I think in some European countries, at least in the 60s and 70s, and maybe now, the opportunity of doing some service in a non-military way.
No, you had no choice. At 18, we just had the fact that you just had to register. And then it was, you were left, you had the medical. Can't remember where the medical was held, but I know it was done sort of in bulk.
Yeah,
everybody kind
in
of turned.
You mean you all passed up? take a sample, and if they're okay, then everyone else is.
No, everybody turned. You know, you were called to turn up at a building somewhere. It was in Palmerston North, I can't to this day remember where it was. Yeah. And you had to go there, and there was a doctor there, and he gave you a check over, and. And then, if depending on, as I said earlier, your eyesight and your whether you had flat feet was always one of the jokes, was the fact that they missed out because they had flat feet. But I can't work out why that was in your problem. But never mind.
Something about running and stuff like that.
I obviously didn't have any of those.
Was it something people sort of hope that they'd fail or hope they get accepted and have to do this?
Oh, I think then basically, in my mind, I wouldn't have minded failing most probably. But, you know, you just accepted the... Yeah, I think there were people that genuinely wanted to fail most probably because it was going to interfere. Some people would have started apprenticeship to see you earlier because they could have left school at 15.
Yeah. So you said you think it was probably a benefit for you what you learned, but did it disrupt your apprenticeship much?
When you went into it, I went into a 4-year apprenticeship as a pharmacist, and I had started that, but the time that you spent in the training was actually counted as part of your time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it wasn't. So
the training was sort of relevant anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah, so the training, no matter what, you still did, as far as pharmacy was concerned, it was still going to end at the same place at the end, you know.
So in your apprenticeship, were there courses that you were going on, so you missed some of that?
No. What happened with pharmacy, you went in and there were two exams, and you worked towards your first exam, which was after 2 years.
Yeah, okay.
During that period of time, you went on a 3-week course to Wellington.
Yeah.
There was what they called a pharmacy college in Cambridge Terrace. Mm-hmm. You went there and did a 3-week stint, learning mainly chemistry, if I remember right, to do with chemistry. And then,
because you were mixing your own medicines in those days?
Oh, yes, in those days we were mixing our own. And then the second, when you went past the first exam, you went on to the second one.
Okay.
And that was sort of a 2-year course.
Yeah.
If you were clever enough to make it and sort of thing. Doing it by correspondence, which wasn't easy.
Yeah.
In that second 2 years, you would again go to pharmacy college and do a 3-week training thing.
Just meant that there was just those weeks of you not being in the pharmacy, you were doing the military service.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So it was just part accepted as being what happened. And I suppose with any apprenticeship, although I think a lot of apprenticeships were numbers of hours, weren't they? So
they were. Because my brother did carpentry, and that was number of hours.
Is that the sort of 10,000 hours?
Something like that.
I can't remember my hours being in hours. I've still got the papers. I should have got them. Wasn't thinking about talking about them, but
Just out of interest, though, what made you choose pharmacy?
Good question. I'll tell you how the story was that I got to the end of boys' high school, my education. The careers master came to me one day and kind of said, "What are you going to do?" And I said, "I don't know." Uh-huh. It was like that. And he says, he gave me, there was a pharmacist in town wanted an apprentice. Uh-huh. So he gave me his name, and I went and had an interview.
Yeah.
And I dithered around and wasn't quite sure whether I wanted to be a pharmacist. And that job went to somebody else. Somebody else
yeah.
got it.
Yeah.
And then he came with another one. He said, oh, this pharmacist wants somebody.
Mm-hmm. Was it something like you were good at chemistry at school? Or
not exceptionally.
Maths or,
not yeah. exceptionally. Okay. I was better at geography than I was. But anyway, I went to see this other pharmacist and got the job. It possibly was the better one of the two.
So it's sort of by default, really. You've not really put much thought into the career you wanted, or
not really. No. I really didn't know what I really wanted to do. Yeah. But I mean, the pharmacy. I always liked the smell of pharmacy. When I was young.
Yeah.
I don't perhaps.
And looking back on it, you think it was a good choice. It suited you, or?
It did, but I don't think I would have wanted to stay in it all my life.
Yeah. So how long did you stay as a pharmacist?
I was in about seven. After my apprenticeship, I actually stayed on at that shop just for a brief period of time, but then didn't want as many qualified people as he had, which I could understand, and I moved on. I actually managed the UFS dispensary in the square.
UFS?
United Friendly Society.
Oh, okay.
It was the lodges, there were quite a group of lodges kind of with the basically the owners of it.
Oh no, that's a whole different area. Lodges and friendly societies.
Yeah, friendly societies. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so
that's another.
I was going to say that would be good to go into.
Yeah. So I managed that for a number of years, a few years. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website. And a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz. If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.